Oh, hi. This is Cindy Howes from Basic Folk, and here's what's happening on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Only Vans, a Texas country music pod with rock star host Bree Bagwell, recently welcomed Matt Hillier.
You sang a song nobody had ever heard, and you kept going, come on, everybody, sing it with me.
You know the words.
You know the words. It was the best.
On Basic Folk, honest conversations with folk musicians, myself and co-host Lizzie Noh recently featured John Moreland.
Some of the lyrics are like, you seem to know some things you must have overheard. It sounds like it's talking about a lover. A couple minutes into the song, he's talking about a smartphone, and it just creeped me out so hard that I got a flip phone too.
Oh, wow. And finally, the String Dusters' Travis Book is hosting the Travis Book Happy Hour, live music and conversation from guests like Trey Hensley.
Just listening to Earl Scruggs play the banjo or play the guitar, you always knew it was him. There was always those people that played, and you immediately, within a few seconds of hearing their instrument, knew it was them.
Hear it all and more on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or wherever you get podcasts. This podcast is sponsored by North Carolina's premier bluegrass celebration, Earl Scruggs Music Festival, returning to Mill Spring, North Carolina this Labor Day weekend at the breathtaking Tryon International Equestrian Center. Artists include Tanya Tucker, Marty Stewart and his Fabulous Superlatives, Old Crow Medicine Show, Yonder Mountain String Band, and more. Help us celebrate the life of Earl Scruggs and his incredible contributions to music and culture from August 30th to September 1st. Passes and lodging are available at earlscruggsmusicfest.com. Hello and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Well, hello. Hi, it's Cindy. I am the host. My name is Cindy Howes, and I host this podcast. Oh boy, we have a Devitri trio today. Maya, Nina, and Lyle are all on the pod talking about music and Lancaster and making up words. We'll get to that momentarily. But first, Basic Folk has a monthly newsletter. I send out an email once a month to let you know what's going on with the podcast. And you can sign up for that at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com. We're on social media. You can follow us at Basic Folk Pod on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. See you in the scroll. And finally, if you'd like to become a donor to Basic Folk, help us produce the show, you can make a contribution. There is a link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com and click on the donate link. Great. Okay, let's get to it. Maya, Nina, and Lyle Devitri's life, beginning in Lancaster, PA, has been music and family, music festivals with old-time music, songwriting, and folk music. The Devitri siblings, including sister Monica, currently teaching art in Western Massachusetts, grew up amongst music and nature in their rural home and even had a family band called Old Time Liberation Front, which is apparently on Spotify and definitely on YouTube. Many jams around the campfire, music lessons, and encouragement from their parents led all three siblings to careers surrounding indie folk music and jazz. Thank you, Nina. All three have released albums in the past year. Maya's new album, The Only Moment, is her fourth record in only 6 years of performing solo in her post-Stray Birds career. Lyle just released his debut album, Door Within a Dream, while simultaneously working alongside other banjo makers at the Pisgah Banjo Company, his current day job. Nina's excellent debut, What You Feel Is Real, came out last year, but she's been busy playing on the Noah Kahn tour as the utility player. Nina's been singing harmonies, playing fiddle, mandolin, banjo, guitar, and 12-string guitar while finding creative inspiration from the energy of the crowds and her newfound musician siblings in Noah's band. In our conversation with the actual Devitri Sibs, we talk about how they feel about each other's creative process, songwriter process, and musician inspiration. They get into how being at all these music festivals and jams as kids bonded them together. We learn about made-up words that their family uses to this day. Stay tuned to find out what a butcha bee and a taffy bub is. Also, they each talk about how disconnected they feel from the mainstream. Nina had never heard of Noah Kahan's music until she was asked to audition for his band. Also, Lyle gets into how being around three sisters, female musicians, and female songwriters has impacted him and his musicality. And don't miss a very special Devitri Which One Lightning Round, wrapping up one of the most special singer-songwriter interviews we've done on Basic Folk. Okay, so what we're going to do is take a listen to clips from all three sibs. First, we'll start with Maya Devitri with Nothing Else Matters.
We were one long night, we were one sweet morning, we were all time. I don't need to live forever to know I'll always love you, I love you. Nothing else matters. We were young and free, we were
up next, let's get to Nina's new single, If We Didn't Have the Night.
Oh, the nights walk so slow when you're lonesome in December. White moon on the snow, your cigarette glows. Cold draft through the wood, windows close but it doesn't do much good. The wind blows and whines, branches paint crooked lines. You put a hand to your heart and say a prayer real soft. Oh, help me through these winter nights, I'm sad and it's so dark. You know you gotta know the gloom to know the light. Oh, we couldn't have day if we didn't have night. I know it might seem long waiting for the sunrise, just know it won't be long till you feel alright.
And finally, we'll check out Lyle Devitri's song, The Wild, and then we'll get to our conversation with Maya, Nina, and Lyle Devitri on Basic Folk.
Shadows on the wall, rise and fall, ballerinas in the bedroom. Well, it sure feels good to dance with you. You and I, with this chance we've been granted to be
All right, this is really special. We have all the Dimitris, well, minus Monica, but Maya, Lyle, and Nina. Welcome to Basic Folk. I'm so excited to have you all.
Thanks, Cindy.
Yeah, thanks, Cindy.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Your family growing up was very musical and creative. To set the scene, the three older Dimitris grew up in like a half-built house in Lancaster, PA that you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. It was finished by the time Nina, who's the youngest, came along. Does that sound right?
When I was in fourth grade.
Fourth, okay. By the time you were in fourth grade, the house was finished, and now it still stands there. So we've heard it previously on Basic Folk from Maya and Nina, but Lyle, this is your first time on Basic Folk. So can you set the scene for what it looked like growing up as a Dimitri and where music was happening?
Sure. Well, I guess the house that you're speaking of was a new house that my dad designed. And growing up, he was always like, he's an architect, and it was his dream to build, like, design his own house. And he was always like, yeah, like, we're gonna move out of this house at some point. And we loved our house that we lived in. It was just pretty small. I shared a room with Maya and Nina for many of those years, and Nina and I shared a bunk bed. That was a sweet little room. But because it was such a small house, we didn't have a lot of space to practice music in solitude or like far away from each other. So often we were all beginning strings, and Maya was playing violin. Also, we were all taking piano lessons at some point. We all started piano at, I think, around the age of 7 or 8. So by the time all of us were like beyond the age of 7 or 8, there was a lot of music happening because we had piano lessons, and Maya was taking violin, Monica was taking cello, I was taking cello, and Nina was taking violin. And yeah, so sometimes, you know, almost all of us or all of us would be practicing at the same time in like different corner rooms of the house. Or I don't
different songs?
Kind of, yeah, different songs. I mean, I kind of blocked part of it out of my memory, I think. But, but I live with my partner, Alice, and we both are musicians and write and practice. And I think I've noticed I have a much higher tolerance of like hearing someone else and still like doing my own thing. And she didn't grow up in a house that like had so much happening at all times. So sometimes I think I just have a little bit of a higher ability to like tune stuff out if I'm like trying to just do my own thing.
High tolerance for pandemonium.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Does that feel like a little bit of a, I guess that, so that was us playing music, but our dad is a really fantastic musician, and our mom is too, and they played together. And sometimes my dad would have, they would both have friends over and have jams. Often that was outside because there was not, you know, so much space outside. So we grew up in this beautiful place that has about like 7 or 8 acres, like on the property with trails that my dad maintained with an old tractor. And we would run around and play capture the flag at night when my dad was having, my parents were having bonfires with like old time jams and stuff. And so that's a big part of my memory with like, in terms of what kind of music was happening. And but it was really wonderful when there was music happening outside, because there was so much more space for it to happen, and it wasn't like bouncing off of the walls. And yeah.
The festival Cliff Top, officially known as the Appalachian String Band Music Festival. So your family did an annual pilgrimage to the old time string band festival in West Virginia, as well as other festivals and jams, like Lyle was just talking about jamming around the campfire. How do you think like those types of atmospheres bonded you all together as siblings?
One of my favorite things about the old time music community is that it's so multi-generational. And so when we would go to those festivals, we'd be hanging out with our parents and their friends' parents and like people of all ages. And I think that that really shaped like as siblings, like encouraging us to all hang out, even though, you know, there's 7 years between Maya and I, only three between Lyle and I. So Lyle and I, you know, did a lot more stuff together as kids. But yeah, just being in that atmosphere where it's like encouraged for people of all ages to be together and play music together, I think helped us all to like be, well, help them to be very inclusive to me as the youngest. I always got to tag along and be included in the capture the flag, even if I was like really tiny and, you know, not as fast or yeah.
Nice. So I thought this would be fun to go around the video, go around the table and hear what you all like and what is distinct about your siblings' musical styles. Like, how do you view each other's musicality? Who wants to start?
I volunteer Maya since she hasn't started yet.
Okay. I have a lot of memories of Lyle just putting guitars in what seemed to me like really random tunings and then leaving them around the house. And we would find them and be like, Lyle, you have to put this back in a normal tuning. No one else knows what's going on here. And like, I don't think I realized how much he was already writing back then, like just in sort of like building his understanding of the guitar and like forming the way his brain works and his fingers work on the guitar. Cause he's such a composer on the guitar in a way that's really unique from like any of us, and we'll write like instrumentals and then have poetic like nature imagery kind of weaving through the guitar parts. But it's so, so intricate. Like what's happening on the guitar is so unique and distinct. And also Lyle can like sing classical music. Like Lyle really, really like studied singing and through high school and like took it seriously and was in these like musical productions and stuff and can sing like that tone and like it has such vocal control and stuff. And then Nina, I feel like is just like such a joyful bringer together of different people in her music. Like she'll gravitate towards people that kind of push her creatively. Thinking of like her collaboration with our friend Micah, this amazing, amazing piano player who she met. You guys met in Philly. Like Micah, just, and then you'd invite Micah to come out and like hang out with our family in Lancaster County. And he was just so excited because he like grew up in Philly and then was like seeing the way our family played music out there. And I think you really had to kind of venture into that world to like, there was, for me, I'm like, I do like more like country folk. You followed this love of jazz and improvised music. It's just really inspiring to see how fearlessly, and also like as an adult, I've seen you like, you're like, I want to get better at piano. I'm going to take more piano lessons. And just like, you are way, way more diligently like learning instruments and broadening your musical horizons like than anyone I know. Long answer, sorry.
That's about all the time we have.
I think they're so great.
Yeah,
Cindy, did you realize when you asked us all to do this that we're all like some of the most long-winded people? Did you think that through?
We have an hour, so I didn't write that many.
You can chop,
so.
Chop me up.
Maya, the first time I interviewed you was before we knew each other, and I remember you gave like all of the questions I had, you gave like at least 5 to 7 minute answers. there's just like nowhere to cut because everything that you were saying was so good. So I feel like that was very brief for Maya. Who's next in this game?
I could go next. I'll start with Maya. So Maya has been writing songs more regularly, I think, for a longer period of time than any of us. And she's the oldest. But I will say Nina was writing songs really early. I'm just going to go on a little tangent for a moment. But she wrote a song that's about this time where I was actually jealous that Nina was writing really good music. And I told her that I didn't like a song that she wrote. And I feel like really horrible about that. We were really young, but she wrote a song about it, I think, kind of recently. But she's like always been like one of my favorite musicians and songwriters. And yeah, you know, I just had a lot of growing up to do. But back to Maya. Maya is one of my favorite lyricists. She's just always been such an amazing writer. She has such a keen and acute ability to like zero in on like really, really tiny moments in life that I think is really beautiful. And that's also really beautifully rhythmic with her music. Maya's like ability to come up with melody is really, really wonderful. And like, I just find her songs to be so catchy. Not to mention, she's also like an incredible fiddle player, and I've always looked up to her. Nina's also a tremendous fiddle player. Nina's also an amazing and thoughtful lyricist too. They're both incredible multi-instrumentalists and composers and writers. Yeah, look up to them a lot.
Nina, take us home here.
All right. I'll try to be succinct here. Lyle has always been one of my favorite songwriters ever. When we were teenagers, he started learning a bunch of like Nick Drake songs and like these like guitar finger picking songs that really, I think, like pushed him as a guitarist. And so I've always been really impressed by how he accompanies himself. These guitar parts that have like so much depth. So he doesn't need a backing band to like give the most like compelling performance, which I think is really rare to find. I'm just really partial to the like genre of music that Lyle writes in, because some of my favorite artists to listen to are like Nick Drake and Sufjan Stevens and Bon Iver. So I feel like whether he were my brother or not, Lyle would be one of my favorite artists to listen to, which is cool. And Maya is truly one of the best lyricists out there. I'm like super in awe of how she crafts a story with her songs. I don't think I like approach songwriting in the same way that she does lyrically. Like I don't even like, I can't begin to even understand like how she writes her songs. Like, she's a really, really amazing co-writer, and there are so many people that she's written amazing songs with, and like anytime she co-writes a song with someone, it feels like they want to record it. It's like she has like this magic ability to like bring out the best in a song and just like make it like a hit and like a palatable story that like really says something, but like, you know, has just enough poetry, but like isn't too flowery or whatever.
So there is a sibling that's not here, Monica. What is she up to, and how does her relationship to music impact you all?
I want to talk about Monica. What she's up to currently is she's packing to move to Massachusetts. She has a new job there as an art teacher, and her partner has a new job as a lacrosse coach, and they're moving their family to Western Mass, which is really exciting. But I think Monica is one of the like most amazing, like I feel like we all have sort of like different archetypes, you know, like Maya's the songwriter and Lyle's the like instrumentalist, like composer, and like Monica, I feel like, is truly like the artist, which I think like goes for both her music and her visual art. And to me, like, I mean, Maya and Lyle also can draw and paint like beautiful stuff, but Monica, I've always been just like so shocked by like what she's able to create with her hands. And I think because she leans towards that, like she just had less time for music in the end and didn't focus on it as much. But I also think she has, I don't know, maybe the best voice of any of us. I love her singing voice so much. She's like an amazing cellist, writes really great songs. Like one of them like popped into my head recently and I like reached out to her. I was like, what is this melody? Is this a song that you wrote? She was like, oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. Maybe I should like record that. And I'm like, she's just one of those people who has like an abundance of ideas. And so she just doesn't get around to all of them. She also has released some music under the name Friendship Cat. It's like a sync project that she was working on with someone. Music for fun, like co-writes, just kind of to see like what would happen and put it out there in case a sync thing wanted to use it. So,
like a TV show or something.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really like catchy and kind of like electronic. And I've like joked with her that she and I should start an electronic project together.
Yeah. Into it. So Maya, the Stray Birds, when you announced the disbanding of the Stray Birds, which is in July of 2018, you said it felt like the end and the beginning of something to me. So that band was something that just had to end for your own creative expression and mental health. It was a hard decision to make, but the right one. How did being a good role model to your younger siblings as their like oldest sister and also fellow musician impact your decision to disband the Stray Birds?
That's a good question. I think, I don't know that it really impacted my decision thinking about my siblings, but I know that my siblings, like, I was aware that they were sort of coming into adulthood, like seeing that I was in a full-time band and that that was like my normal and that was my life, as that I just toured year round. And at that point, that was all I knew as an adult. And I've tried to not romanticize touring and not romanticize being a professional musician or being a full-time musician or anything like that. I think by me choosing to like step everything I did, like in stepping away from touring and choosing to like not go get a gig with another band, but to work a job in town and to like turn away from music for a while. Those were all things I was doing for like self-preservation kind of, and like taking care of myself. But I was really aware that like my siblings were, you know, I don't know, like making choices about like what to do creatively and musically too. And yeah, I think I'm so excited for, you know, for Nina coming into music and choosing to put her own music out there, and then for choosing to audition to be in another band and go on the road, and for Lyle for choosing to put a solo record out there. And also I'll mention that Monica does have a few other things out there. She has a project with or some recordings with Jordan Rast, who is someone in our hometown that we grew up playing a lot of music with his whole family. She's got some stuff out with that. And then also the Old Time Liberation Front is a band that we had that competed at Clifftop like a long time ago. And Monica sings some of her original songs on the recording. I think it's on like streaming and or Bandcamp or something. It's out there. It's findable.
I don't know if that's out there.
It's somewhere.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, it's somewhere. And
what's it called again?
It's called the Old Time Liberation Front. And we put a record out called 2012, which at the time was like still in the future. It's that long ago. But she sings original songs on that are so, so good. I think she was writing and singing her songs before I had started writing and singing in front of anyone. You know, she was really, she would play the cello and sing. But yeah, I think I've just always kind of tried to not romanticize it or not pressure anybody, answer questions if anybody had questions, like specific questions about things. But I also really feel strongly that, like, you know, each of my siblings' journeys is like their journey, and like my path and my answers might be totally irrelevant to what they're doing. But I've tried to be a resource. The decision to end the band, though, that was its own, like, yeah, its own full body moment of like, okay, turn the page, I'm out.
Lyle and Nina, how do you feel as Maya, as like a musical role model? Also, what was it like for you when Maya left the band and went out on her own? Like, was there any particular feelings you were feeling, like relief, sadness? Could you see yourself in her choice?
It's been a long time now, but like specifically like when it happened, I didn't understand at the time how, you know, bands tour a lot and relationships can deteriorate over time. You know, there were some, like, it was just probably, I think, really hard for them to be touring as rigorously as they were. And I didn't know to the extent to which that had like taken a toll on Maya and the others in the band. And so I think it was a little surprising initially, but then like talking with Maya more about her choice, it was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Also like seeing her kind of come into her own as a solo artist in the following like few years, and putting out her first album, Adaptations, was really, really amazing. Yeah, as much as she had like poured all of her heart and energy into this band, I can like totally see that like she's really thriving now, like even like more than ever.
Maya has definitely been a huge role model to me. But what's funny is that the whole time that she did the Stray Birds, I was in like seventh grade when they started, and maybe like second or third year of college when they broke up. That entire time, I was like super into like academics in high school, and I was like, I'm going to be the only kid in this family that has a real job someday. And I don't think that I saw her doing that and was like, I'm going to do that too. Like at the time I was like, I am going to like get a PhD or something and like go to med school. And then I like went to college and was like, oh my God, what am I doing? I miss music. What's happening? And got a Spanish degree. And then finally, like, after the Stray Birds had ended, decided that I was going to pursue music. So I think that like subconsciously, like seeing her be in a full-time band did give me this impression of like, this is a viable career path. But I didn't like think that while she was doing it. I was like, well, that's really cool, but like, I'm going to do something else. You know, I think I always felt like sort of hell-bent on like doing my own thing and like paving my own way or something. Now as an adult and like definitely pursuing music full time, I'm like, I look back and see how much like she has shaped my life in a very like hands-off way. She wasn't like ever trying to shape my life. I would say like one of the biggest ways she did that was like being an example of just like following your heart and like creating your path and, you know, making changes as you need to if it's not working anymore. And then also just like being so generous with her community that she was meeting and like introducing us all to all of her friends and telling us we all needed to come to Miles of Music and like, you know, letting us come like visit her in Nashville and taking us around to like to meet all of her favorite people here. And I think like in those ways, she's definitely changed our lives, I think. And I wonder like if I'd be here, if, I mean, hopefully I'd be here like alive, but like if I would be here where I am, like doing what I'm doing, if I didn't have my siblings going before me, like paving the way and showing me all the fun stuff that I've done.
Maya's new album is The Only Moment. It is your fourth record in 6 years. Awesome. In your press release, it describes your songs as her evocative storytelling grounded in everyday language. So this fact is true for all the Dimitris on the call. Your family is from the country, Amish country in Lancaster, PA. It is true country times out there. How did your family relate to language growing up? And how does that impact the way you feel about it now?
We made up a lot of words. Yeah, sometimes we laugh that there's like a Dimitri language. Just like random words for things. Or like if one of the little kids like had a name for like had a word that they would call this thing, it would just become that.
Do you remember any of those words?
Well, Lyle used to call birds butchabees.
Bathtub is taffy bub. Brushing teeth is hop teeth.
Pavilion was pullion.
Yeah, we just continue to use these. Like if we're talking with our immediate family, you can use them interchangeably.
Like love you so much is laffy sibach.
I don't know. I feel like one language thing that's interesting for our family is like our last name is, it really sticks out in Lancaster County. Like it's French. And I used to want like a different last name when I was a kid just to like fit in more in our school. And our grandpa, like my dad's dad, he moved to the US when that whole family moved when they, he was like 18, I think. So he had a really, really strong accent. We have a lot of second cousins who are fluent in French and English and grew up kind of more bicultural than us because maybe their parents like also married or their grandparents like also married other French immigrant families. So that was always kind of interesting, like going to family gatherings and hearing like half French spoken and half English and some people switching in and out. And it was interesting to me. I felt it's one of the first like ways that I experienced like feeling different in my life was that early on. I don't know if you guys, we never really talked about that, but.
We never did. I was going to say, it's interesting to hear you say that. Cause I never felt that way. I remember in elementary school feeling like really proud of my name because it was different and being like, my name is really cool. And it has like a space in it between the D, E and the V and just feeling sort of like excited about our name. Maybe it's generational because I'm a cusper for Gen Z and you're more of a millennial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I just know like I didn't like to stick out. I remember, and it was, yeah, I was like, gosh, I wish I could just kind of be a Mary Stoltzfus and blend in with everybody else in Lancaster County. But I'm not. I don't know.
All right, let's talk about Nina. You guys, let's talk about Nina. Nina's debut album came out last year, What You Feel Is Real. Great record. You released a new song earlier this year. Hopefully more songs to come this year. Yeah, okay. Nina's career has recently taken a 180. You've joined Noah Kahan's touring band, playing in front of tens of thousands of people. You're invited to audition for the band, but you had never heard of Noah Kahan's music before, who is, if you're not aware, a hugely successful viral folk artist who have had millions and millions of views on TikTok, has like 32 million listeners on Spotify. His top song has like 38 billion songs. He is very popular. What is the Dimitri reputation for being conscious of the mainstream?
Oh my God. This is such a good question. I literally said to my boyfriend, Sam, the other day, we played this festival last weekend outside of Des Moines called Hinterland, and like Chapel Roan played and the Japanese House and usually when we go to these festivals, I don't really know any of the other artists who are playing there, even though they're like hugely successful, very popular artists. I had a really good time listening to all of these other artists, and I was like, wow, these people are like so amazing. Like, I love the Japanese house. My friends were like, you just figured out who they were. Like, you didn't know who that was. And I said to Sam, I was like, oh my God, of all of our siblings, like, I feel like I was the one who always kind of loved pop music and I was kind of shamed for it. And I'm like, now, I was like, it's so funny. I can't imagine. I was like, if Lyle had to play at this festival and like listen to like loud pop music all day, like, I just feel like he would hate it. Maybe that's not true, Lyle, but I just said this to Sam. I was like, it's so funny that I ended up here because I've always like had this inclination for like loving this like loud music that bumps in a way that our other family members don't. Like, I would like turn to the pop radio station in the car and my mom would be like, turn that off or I'll like drive off the road. Like, it was like, it was crazy. So I don't know. Maya, Lyle, what's your take on mainstream music in our family?
People are always really, well, maybe people who are newer in my life are really surprised at the things that I'm not aware of and like in the music world. But people who know me, and I think who know our family are like pretty well aware that a lot of us like aren't like really that aware of a lot of like the mainstream stuff that's happening. Yeah, I think a lot of that probably did come from our parents. Like, we sort of learned from them that like pop music was bad. And I've since had to like unlearn that pop music is not bad. and that it can be really, really good. It can definitely sound like really elitist to say that like pop music is bad. You know, there's so much pop music out there that's like so, so carefully crafted and like really, really melodically beautiful. And I think like the way that it's produced is a big thing for me, and that like I just am not always ready to hear like all of the saturated sound like pushed at me as much.
When are you ready to hear it? 11 o'clock in the morning.
Good question.
When he's got his really, really dense earplugs. And
yeah, I need like, I'm like really, really sensitive to a lot of things in life, but sound being like loud things in general just like really make me feel kind of anxious. Yeah, I have to be prepared with like protection, ear protection.
Love it.
I think that, so like I was born in 1990. And then Monica was next, and she was born in 92. And I remember getting like going to the CD store and getting like, I was just always really into acoustic music. I'd pick out like the new Nickel Creek CD or something like that. And that was like my pop music. That was the music. It was like kind of too edgy for my parents, was Nickel Creek. But Monica really liked, she would get like, it was like the Now 7 or like Now 10 or so, you know, those collections, and it had like Britney Spears or like Backstreet Boys or just like the, you know, the top most popular stuff. And I think my parents kind of saw it as like the music at the mall or something. It was like, that sounds like something I'd hear at H&M, or that sounds like something I'd hear in the food court at Park City. And they didn't want to listen to that because it was like mall music. And I think, like Nina, you were saying, like I think Monica had a hard time with that. Looking back, like I'm thinking about, because she loved that music and her friends loved it, and I also like had a lot of my friends listened to Christian rock. I was like, I wanted to be in on what they were listening to and like understand their culture and know. But a lot of my friends in my elementary school were only listening to Christian rock and like contemporary Christian music. And so, and that was like, I remember like I would get a CD and listen to it on my like little Discman thing of like some, like the Newsboys or something. So I could like understand I think I listened to a lot more Christian rock growing up than our parents had any idea, because I was listening to it in private on my little Discman, and or like, going for a run just so I could know the songs and the people that my friends were talking about, because they were all so into, that was like all their families listened to. That was my way to like switch to be able to hang out with them, was to do that. But then in my family, it was all like, you know, bluegrass and old time music and any music that you would not hear at the mall. And I think like now I'm just thinking about like, I love so many kinds of music, and I just have a much wider listening like then. But I mean, also like I completely like missed John Mayer. I got a chance to like play for John Mayer when I was 21 in this like songwriting workshop setting. I was like, who's John Mayer? And I was like, and my housemate was like, he's like really famous. You should probably know who he is before you go play a song for him. And so I just like listened to some of his music. I like looked him up and listened to something. And then, but I didn't have any nerves about playing in front of him, because like he didn't have the weight of, I don't know, it's interesting. Like the people that I am starstruck by are like, so it's such a different scale, I guess, of, you know, then, you know what I mean?
That's such a good, Maya, you just captured something that I haven't been able to put into words. I feel like the most nervous I've been all summer is I went to Rocky Grass, this bluegrass festival in Colorado with my boyfriend Sam and his family. And there's this woman who's like this incredible fiddle player named Natalie Padilla, who I just met there. And she came over and jammed with us in the street one night. And I was like, oh my God, she's perfect. She's so good. And she asked us to come up for her set to like play an old time tune with her in the Wildflower Pavilion. The amount of nerves I felt in my body to get up there and play an old time tune with this woman, and is like in front of like, I don't know, maybe like Bella Fleck could have been in the audience, or like Tim O'Brien, like these like bluegrass household names that we grew up like going to see. I was way more nervous for that than any of the shows that I've played this entire summer, which says a lot.
Lyle and Maya, had you heard of Noah Kahan before? No. All right. So this is all tracking.
I heard the name, but I didn't know. I would not have been able to like draw a line from like Stick Season to Noah Kahan and match it on a on a test.
Nina, the audition process sounded pretty interesting for Noah's band. So can you talk about that process, how your family played into your preparation, and then like what did you learn about yourself in the preparation process?
Yeah, the music director reached out last October. Our friend John Mylander, who was like Maya's roommate in Boston and used to come to our house for Thanksgiving and stuff sometimes, he recommended me. So the music director reached out and was like, hey, think you might be like a fit for Noah Kahan's band. And it's like, who's that? So I looked it up, and then we talked on the phone, and I was like, yeah, there's some like three finger banjo on the record. Like, I just need to be transparent. Like, I don't really do that. And the music director, this guy, Gabe, is like, who also produced the record with Noah, was so nice to me on the phone. And he was like, oh, it's fine. Like, I've never been a music director before. Like, just make some videos and send them to me. Can you send them like tomorrow? And I was like, oh, I'm actually like in New York City right now. And then I like, Lyle and I had a show the next day in Lancaster. So I was like, can I get them to you by like Friday? I'll try to like track down a banjo. So the first step was that I learned four songs, like fiddle, banjo, and keys, actually, which is funny because I don't play keys in the band, but I think that was part of like why John recommended me, because they were looking for someone who also played keys. So it's kind of cool that my like passion for the piano opened that door, even though I'm not using that in the band. I was home in Lancaster. Our very dear friends, the Rasts, lent me a banjo. I kind of holed away in Lyle's room, actually, because it was like in the attic of our house, where I could be alone and not annoy everyone with my little tinkling on the banjo. I practiced for like a day and I learned those songs, and then I sent them over back to the, like, how does the family, how did your family play into it and impact you? That week I was like talking to my parents and I was like, I don't know. Like, this seems crazy. Do you think I should I do this? And they were like, yeah, of course you should do it. They were super excited about it and honestly like helped pump me up a little bit, because I felt like super unqualified and like my whole body, like I've never felt full body nerves the way I felt that week. And I was like, this probably means that like I shouldn't do it. I'm like so scared. And then my sister Monica was like, no, I think that means you should do it. I think that's what that feeling is. And I remember like I talked to Lyle about it. He actually, I think, had COVID. So he was like in our basement and I was like at the top of the stairs and I like turned on a Noah song on my phone.
Oh,
I was like, listen to this, Lyle, like down the stair. We were like 20 feet apart. I was like, what do you think? I might join this band. And he was like, yeah, okay. I can't really hear it, but and I like, I think I was like, hey, Maya, can you talk about this thing? And she was like, sorry, I'm like, she like had some gigs and she was really busy. And, but that was fine, 'cause I had, you know, plenty of other people to toss around the idea with. Long story short, they liked the videos and I talked to Noah on the phone, and then I didn't hear anything for like a month, and I knew they were still on tour. And I talked to John Mylander. I was like, is this normal? Should I say it? Should I reach out? I was like, maybe they'll never talk to me again. And like, that's fine. And John was like, yeah, just give him some time. Like, this is pretty typical. And finally I heard back like around Thanksgiving, and they were like, we want you to come in person in December and like audition with the band. We're going to have like a couple people come in and see what vibes. I would say what I learned about myself in the process was like, it was a really good test of like being in this crazy limbo space where like you have to like be practicing like this like non-attachment of like, I might not like hear back from these people ever, but I really want this thing. But wait, do I really want this thing? You know, like there are like so many emotions, because I didn't even know what it would fully entail. And I was like, scared that they would like want me to do it, but then realize that I wasn't actually like up for it or something. And so the fact that it was really drawn out and there were like different stages of them being like, okay, check. Like, now can you do this? Okay, check. Like, I'm really glad it was so thorough, because I needed to know that like they fully trusted me to do it in order to like trust myself to do it, kind of. Like, I was like, I cannot, like when I first auditioned, I was like, I'll learn banjo for this video, but if I get into the band, I'll tell them like, okay, but I'm actually not going to play banjo though. But by the time we got to the point where Noah called me after the audition and was like, you want to join the band? I was like, yeah, cool. Well, now I've had like 2 months to shed the banjo, and like, I know I only just have to play these 3 songs, and now like those are some of my favorite ones in the band to play. My family was extremely supportive. My community was extremely supportive. I borrowed so many like instruments along the way. I didn't have like all the stuff that I needed even for the audition, and like half of the instruments I went in with weren't mine, and the guys were like, oh, that's a sweet banjo. Like, what is that? I was like, I actually don't know. This isn't actually my banjo. And they were like, that's a cool mandolin too. And I was like, ah, yeah, it's not my mandolin either. I was like, I promise I own the fiddle, and that I can get a hold of a banjo and a mando of my own if you hire me. So,
Maya and Lyle, have you seen Nina in the band?
Yeah.
What's that like?
First time I ever saw her play banjo was at Bridgestone Arena. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. Pretty surreal. I had never been to a show like that. like that big.
It was like an. You know?
Did you have earplugs?
Yes,
I did. It was still overwhelming. It was a little overwhelming, like the sound, but it was really cool to see Nina up there, and she killed it.
Wow, nice. This might be like not accurate, Nina, but just let me know. It seems like you in Noah's band have access to a world where music is like big business, a commodity. Music is content. Music is a product, not necessarily from Noah himself, but I'm wondering if there are like businessy, like money people around. What has been your experience in that world and how has it impacted your desire to be creative?
It's a good question. It has definitely clarified how I see my role as like a creative person and an artist, in that like I've always been someone who's kind of just like throwing everything at the wall to like see what sticks. And I love playing a new instrument and then I get kind of bored and I play another one. After doing this gig for a while, I've like reflected a lot on like, how did I end up here? And like, is this what I want for myself? And I've realized like how much I love being a side person. I hesitate to say this because I don't want to like detract from what I've put out into the world as an artist. But like for me, creating a project of my own, I remember largely just being like, I just want to play shows. Back when I was like 18, 19, I was playing some shows with like my sister and some friends around town. And then they started like kind of doing their own thing. And I remember being like, I really want to play. How do I do it? You know, like I want to be part of a band. I want to do this. And I had always like written songs as a teen. So I put together my own project. I've just sort of been like traveling down that road as a way to get to like be a musician. Being so close to the like big business side of it definitely clarifies for me that like it's not a personal goal of mine to like attain anything close to what Noah has attained as like an artist. I do love writing, but I'm not super prolific the way that like Maya and Lyle are, which is why I like released an EP in 2017 and an album in 2023. You know, there were 6 years between like my music release. And I feel like my process as an artist is more like a challenge, a process for myself to like learn about myself in that stage of life and like process what's going on and put out music at the same time and connect to people in that way. But like, yeah, like being a part of Noah's project has like clarified for me, back to the archetype thing we were saying, like, I don't think that I am the archetype of a songwriter necessarily. I feel like the archetype more of just a like musician, which I would say is kind of what our dad is, just sort of like generally inspired by music and wanting to get in on it like however I can and like jam with people and write sometimes, but like love like supporting other people's music. So yeah, I think having experience like leading my own project and taking my own band on the road and feeling like how hard that is when you don't have the business infrastructure, I am down to do that a little bit, but I also don't want the big business infrastructure like pushing me as an artist where I'm at this place where like I'm not in control of my music and I have to be like filling some quota and making more music than I feel is naturally coming out of me. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, for sure. Listen, ladies, we've come to the Lyle part of the interview. Lyle DeVitri, the new album Door Within a Dream just came out. Congratulations, debut album. You are living in Asheville, North Carolina, and your day job is a banjo maker, Pisca Banjo Company. How has building instruments changed your relationship to playing your instrument, which is guitar?
Yeah, well, I set them up. That's like my primary role. So I assemble all the parts and set them up. So like,
what does that mean? Set them up.
It means like making sure the action feels good. Like the space between the fretboard and the strings. So like, it's not too hard to press the strings down, but also they're not so low that they're going to buzz on the frets. There's kind of like a sweet spot. Yeah. I think I've become maybe even more attuned to like the setup on my own instrument and the way it feels and tinkering with it, or like I'm not really like able to work on guitars as well as I can on a banjo, but I think also when I'm working there and like I'm not there full time right now, I'm doing like a few other things on the side as well, but when I was full time, we tune our banjos to G. I tuned so many banjos that I didn't have to use a tuner anymore because I just had that like G in my head, and I don't have perfect pitch, but I just like had learned what the G sounded like. I could like even like just hum a G when I wasn't working, and I'm not sure if I can do it now because I'm not like there full time, but yeah, I think tuning the banjos and playing them every day, I think helped my ear. Like, I think I've always had a pretty good ear, but just an ear for intonation and tuning by ear, which is, I tune a lot in my sets when I play music. I use a lot of alternate tunings, like Maya said. And yeah, so I think it's helped me feel even like more fluid at like, and comfortable just kind of like not using a tuner, and which I do use a tuner when I'm playing with other people, because I, like I said, I don't have perfect pitch, but I'm able to get the guitar to sound in tune with itself. So I might be like a few quarter tones flat or sharp, but it all sounds good to me, you know?
Hmm. Are you going to make Nina a banjo?
If she wants one, maybe. Yeah.
So Lyle, you grew up with three sisters.
Yeah.
How do you see that impacting the adult and like even the musician you've become? Like, how do you relate to like being a man and masculinity when you were younger? And what does that look like now? And sisters, feel free to chime in here.
Sure. Growing up with three sisters, I think I am like a lot more in touch with my femininity than I would have been otherwise. I'm not sure who's to say, but I feel like I'm like a lot more sensitive than a lot of like men that I meet in the world. And I'm drawn to other, like making friends with other men who are really sensitive too, and like to talk about their feelings.
Is Lyle the most sensitive of all the siblings?
In terms of like nicest, yeah, for sure.
All right. One more question here, and then we're going to do a lightning round that I think Maya has done before, but I don't think Nina and Lyle have done it, but okay. This is a question about being bored. I was visiting with my brother at his in-laws' summer house nearby us here in Portland, and they had all their kids there, and the kids were like playing and hanging out together. And he made a comment to me about how they get really bored there. But my response was like, isn't that a really good thing for a kid to be bored? So Lyle's album is drawing influence from like small, quiet moments and nature. And this is from your press release that draws attention to the magnificence of the mundane. So what do you think about the mundane and being bored? And how did you experience boredom and the mundane as kids?
I love that question. Recently, I've been reflecting on the fact that I think my threshold for taking in media is really low. And I think it has a lot to do with how we were raised, and that most of the time we weren't like really allowed to watch our tiny TV with like three channels. And, you know, we had super big limits on that screen time. Didn't have cell phones till like later in high school. Once in a while would be allowed to like play Neopets for 15 minutes on my parents' like dial-up internet computer. But I think, like, part of, like, hearkening back to the question about mainstream stuff, I feel like part of why I'm still so behind with, like, the mainstream world is just, like, I don't feel like I have the capacity to take in a lot of stuff. Like, if I have free time, I rarely even want to be listening to music. Like, I love to just, like, take a walk in the woods or, like, sit in my sunroom and, like, open up a book or, like, you know, maybe I'll scroll through my phone some because I live in 2024. But, like, I love the mundane. I love quiet, and I love not having much on my calendar and not doing much if I have free time.
I remember when we were kids, like, coming up with a lot of imaginary games, especially with Nina. Nina and I played a lot together outside as kids. And yeah, I feel like we would get, you know, if we were bored, then we would just, like, come up with a new game or play a game outside. And there's just so much outside that's, like, hard to get bored, I think. Even just like going around and, like, looking at bugs and, or, like, trying to, like, find animals. Or one time Maya had an assignment in a science class where she needed to, like, draw a little ecosystem that she found in her yard, and everyone else, like, came back and, like, had, like, okay, like, here's my, like, cricket and there's a mouse and, like, you know, maybe things that might live in the yard. And Maya found a great horned owl that was nesting in our woods. And so she was like, okay, well, there's the great horned owl, and then there's, like, the mouse and the cricket. And, like, it was just like, wow, that's so cool. But yeah, I think it is so important to be bored. And it is important to, like, remind yourself to, as an artist, to, like, allow time and space to just have, like, yeah, empty, quiet, because otherwise there's just too much bombarding you in the world, like, with noise. And not that you can't be creative, like, in loud places, or, like, I've, like, worked on lyrics at, like, a cafe where it's, like, pretty hustle bustle. But what are your thoughts, Maya?
Yeah, sometimes I get really, really nostalgic for my childhood just because of the difference in the input, like you're talking about, Nina. I just remember, like, yeah, just being outside for hours and hours, just, like, wandering around. Like, I remember I was so mad when our dad cut this tree branch down because he said he couldn't drive his tractor under it, so he was gonna have to get rid of the branch. And I was devastated, and I took the branch and, like, carried it into the woods, and then I would go sit with my branch and, like, visit it. And I'm like, what child was I? That's so strange. But then when I, like, think about, like, what the rest of our life was like, it just, like, makes perfect sense. I don't know, just it was so, or, like, our dad didn't want anybody to call the landline after 9 p.m. And that was, like, a big argument when we were in high school. Like, if one of our friends would call after 9 p.m., they'd call at, like, 9:30, and he'd be like, don't you know, this is, like, you know, this is family time. Like, this is solitude. Like, the day ends. You can't, like, come through. This is, like, and I don't know, just those boundaries, like, that sense of, like, there's a time where the world, like, the outside world, just, like, there's a time for us to be quiet. And not that our house was, like, quiet, but there's a time for, like, just, there's a time to turn down the outside. I think that it's something I lose track of how to get back to that. But yeah, if I find myself, like, with free time, it's very hard for me to get, like, truly bored, because I'll just get, like, I'll just find something interesting to look at. But yeah, it was a very, very key part of making up stories in my head, or playing instruments, you know, like, that there's not a whole lot of other things to compete for your attention. That, okay, well, I guess I'll just, like, go learn this fiddle tune. There's nothing else to do.
All right. You guys ready to play the lightning round game? It is called Which One? So the answers to this question can be Nina, Lyle, Maya, Monica. You want to throw that in there? Or none of us or all of us. So pick one of those answers. I'm going to ask the question and go 3, 2, 1. And then we all say you all say the answer at the same time. Does this make sense? Yes. Okay. Which one is up first in the morning? 3, 2, 1.
Lyle.
Okay. Which one is snacking? 3, 2, 1.
Nina.
Monica.
That makes sense. Okay. Which one is napping? 3, 2, 1.
Nina.
I love the consensus. Okay. This is kind of a complicated one, but which one did all their homework on the bus in the morning on the way to school? 3, 2, 1.
Lyle?
Monica?
Lyle or Monica?
All right. I got two more here. Which one is swimming in all the swimming holes? 3, 2, 1.
Lyle and Maya.
All right. This is the last one. Which one is petting all the dogs? 3, 2, 1.
Lyle.
All of us,
probably.
All of us?
Great. Oh, thanks, guys, for doing this. This was nice to have everybody on. Next time we'll get Monica in there.
Yeah.
Should have done it. Cool. Well, thanks for being on, and congrats on all your projects and albums. Hope you had fun.
This was
thanks so
fun.
Much, Cindy.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you.
We should all hang out in the real world soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Alex Stanton does our music. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there, wherever you get podcasts. You can go to folkalley.com or find us on Folk Alley's mobile app. You can search Basic Folk on SiriusXM's app, or you can check out our website, basicfolk.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, perhaps send it to your mother, who also has 3 siblings and might want to also listen to how 3 other siblings interact with each other on a podcast. That's right. Send it to your mom. Okay. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.